Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. Today, we're joined by Rikard Fritjofsson.
We also know that we are a talent factory. We are like Ajax Amsterdam in football, that we want to play Champions League final, but we also have the risk of losing talents to the bigger clubs in Europe.
Rikard is the founder and CEO of a successful multi-brand recruitment company that's placed over 5,000 people in 40 countries.
I really love to travel. I really love to explore new cultures and meet new people. And I don't see really countries having borders in the same way as maybe you look at on it that's on a map. I see more that the world is like open for people to move and work and meet and explore and share things with each other.
They have different brands with different specialisms, including language recruitment, IT, and executive search.
We want to be best in what we do. We are sports people, so that sports mentality of always being best. And for me, best is not always 100%, but say that you're in competition with someone else and you deliver 51%, then you can say that you are the best, or you maybe don't deliver the most, but you deliver the best on quality. So you have the most placements, even if you don't send the most candidates. Like, so always finding the trigger to be best.
And he successfully grew the company from 0 to 5 million in just 6 years. Rikard, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Mark. Thank you so much. Fun to be here.
Awesome. So we originally crossed paths about 6 years ago. We've never actually done business, but we've sort of kept in touch over the years. What inspired you to reach out about the podcast?
No, but I started to listen more to your podcast there a few months ago when we were also stepped into the executive search part, and some of your guests and people that joined your pod had many good ideas to share. So I started to listen to it, and I also do a 1 hour power walk every morning, so that it was perfect to listen to one pod at the time when I was walking.
Oh, awesome. I'm glad to keep you company on your walk. That's brilliant. So I think you live in Spain now, right? But you're originally Swedish. And it seems like in both your business as well as your personal life, there's been this theme of embracing different countries, different nationalities, languages, cultures. Where does that passion for sort of the multinational aspect come from?
Yes. So yeah, you're correct. I'm Swedish. I live in Norway, in Oslo, been here the last 15 years. But I also have an apartment in Spain, in Malaga. And our biggest office today is in Malaga, Spain. So I have the opportunity to travel and be at both locations. So that is a fantastic thing. And I think that the part with, I would say this culture thing is that I really love to travel. I really love to explore new cultures and meet new people. And I don't see really countries having borders in the same way as maybe you look at on it that's on a map. I see more that the world is like open for people to move and work and meet and explore and share things with each other. So that is kind of the mindset.
I love it. In fact, so we're, as you know, we're based in the UK, but more than half our clients are in the US. And then we also have clients in Europe. And what I've found is that of course, there's cultural differences, there's nuances, there's etiquette, there's differences in the way we communicate. But deep down, people are people, right? We are, you know, motivated by the same things. We have the same aspirations. We have the same struggles. And so I always try and focus on what the differences that divide us, focus on what we have in common that connects us. And, so that I think is transferable to the recruiting game as well. I want to learn about your story of scaling the business, which is phenomenal what you guys are doing. Before we do that, how did you get into recruitment in the first place?
It was a coincidence, to be honest. I kind of applied for a job in Oslo 15 years ago, sales manager in the industry. And then I was selected. And the funny part that the guy that was the country manager here in Norway actually was from my sport, bandy. So he knew a bit who I was, and I didn't know when I joined the interview. So kind of we build a good connection there in the interview call. And then I started in the industry 15 years ago. So it was a coincidence. And then, of course, I kind of love recruitment in a way, because you do so many different things during a week, month, year. So the variation of tasks is so fantastic. And I think that's why I have stayed and also started my own business.
All right. Awesome. That's cool. We should mention Bandy, because I know that you were a player at a high level, and now you're the national coach for Team Oslo, right?
Yeah, Norway. Team
Norway. Sorry. Wow.
So the national team. Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, national team, of course. And so I had to look up Bandy. What is Bandy? I understand it's a relation of ice hockey, but it's a little bit different. And it started in the UK, I think, but it's very popular in Nordics. Can you say a little bit about Bandy and how that has influenced your business trajectory?
Absolutely. No, but Bandy, it was an outdoor, or is an outdoor sport. So you need to have artificial ice, more or less now, because the winters are so bad. So I think that's why the sport died out, maybe in UK and other parts of the world. But it's a Nordic and former like Soviet sport. Russia, I think, is the best, but they are banned today. And Sweden is like on a good second place. It's how like I take Bandy into my work and life is maybe to find the best pieces of how you build a team, how you work in a team, how you find the position in the team, not only on the field, but also in the group of people you are with, and that it can be different ages in a team as well. So one in the team can be 35, and then you have a junior coming up that is 17, and those people need to work together or play together, and finding then norms, values, how you put up goals, how you trigger each other to success, how you celebrate success, how you know, also are together in hard times, and how you can turn it around, how you put up tactics, all those things that add that into business, and using the best of business together with the best of sports, that have been a kind of my mentality and tactic the last 8-10 years.
I love that. That is a really interesting perspective, and I'm sure we'll explore that in more detail as we go along today. So you started out, you got a sales manager position in recruitment, and then ultimately you decided to set up your own firm, which I think was it 2016?
Yeah.
Okay. Correct. So you started, now we should say you're a multi-brand company. So like, I didn't give them all in the introduction because it would be too long, but you've got worldwiders.com, nordicjobsworldwide.com, multilingualjobsworldwide.com, itjobsworldwide.com, asianjobsworldwide.com. The worldwide seems to be the common theme. Like these are all, even in the different disciplines, whether it's language, whether it's IT, they're all global, right? So which was your original brand, and why did you decide to focus on international jobs right from the very beginning?
Yeah, so I was working in Norway and the Nordics with business, right? And I could see that more and more business in the Nordics was either outsourced, or that business centers was somewhere else in Europe, especially. And that, so for example, say that I contact Google in Norway and I say, oh, I want to help you with recruitment. Then the answer would be no, but sorry, we have outsourced that to a BPO, or the office is located in Ireland, so we only hire there. And then I started to see that companies in Ireland had Swedish-speaking customer support, Swedish-speaking sales manager positions open. So I did a research and I figured out that no companies actually in the world, even if recruitment industry is big, is doing the niche of language recruitment of Nordics. So we were actually the first to step into that niche in 2016. So Norwegian, Swedish, Danish, Finnish was the specialization. And the business developed from there. And we decided also to build it organically, like stone by stone, no investors, no loans, just like every colleague success leads to the next hiring. And yeah, we just expanded, like more countries, more clients. And then after some time, the clients started to ask for German, Dutch, French, Italian speakers. So we established a multilingual brand. Then the clients started to ask, yeah, but you are so good with the Nordics. Can you help us with developers, IT professionals? And yeah, of course, then we established IT. And also now with the executive search part, it's more that we are not recruiting a language specialization, but we are recruiting functional expertise, or actually local. We are local experts, or we can do a wide search on a specific role. So for example, today we help one client with the same role in 20 locations worldwide.
Wow, that's cool. I did. Okay, this is really interesting. So the original premise was you were placing Nordic language native speakers, but internationally.
Yes, so abroad. So relocation abroad. Almost included.
Okay, so you were exporting. So what's it? So a contact center, or is that a kind of key client for you? Or what are the sorts of environments where a company, let's say in Ireland or in, you know, elsewhere, would need someone who speaks Swedish or Finnish or what have you?
Yeah, so contact centers, absolutely, like the big BPOs, you have clients like Teleperformance, and they have big, big projects with maybe a big search engine optimization partner or a SoMe client, and they need 20 different languages to cover content moderating or customer support or sales, and they want to have everyone located at one place. So then you recruit all those people to go to Lisbon. And for the candidate, they get like job expertise within that field or within that industry or client. And they also get the culture experience. And some people get the sun or the ocean and other things that they can be interested in to explore in life.
Awesome. All right. Okay. So that makes sense. So that was the initial premise.
Yeah.
And that proved successful. But then from there, you encountered other opportunities like, well, can you help us with other languages? And then, hey, you know, could you help us with IT? And so it's kind of grown from there. But why did you choose to create separate brands for each of those kind of divisions within the business?
Oh, I don't know, to be honest. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. We will see. And maybe it can change in the future as well. But I think that the main point was that Nordic Jobs Worldwide was so specialized in Nordic speakers and the Nordic, we are still the go-to agency for jobs abroad for Nordic speakers. So add in that we need a Python developer that we are headhunting from Bulgaria to go to Cyprus. It's not really matching into that niche.
That makes sense, of course. Yeah. Because you'd chosen a brand name that was so identified with a specific niche, it wouldn't make sense to recruit a Python developer from Nordic Jobs Worldwide, right? That,
in a way, no.
Yeah, I get it now. I get
maybe
it. So that's why you need
something.
IT Jobs Worldwide to cover that.
Yeah.
Okay. Correct. All right. That makes sense. So now that I understand the kind of big picture of the genesis, but then the evolution of the business, let's go back to launching NordicJobsWorldwide.com and the sort of key milestones in the way that you scaled that business, because it's a short time. It was only 2016. That's like eight years ago, I guess. And you've accomplished a lot in just eight short years. Talk to me about that first year and, you know, what that was like. Because I always find like there's certain stages that companies go through when they scale. And the first year obviously is critical, because if you don't make it, you know, then there's not going to be a year two or year three. What happened during that first year? And Oslo, was that the first office?
Yes.
Because
you've
got Oslo, Barcelona, Malaga, Lisbon, Malta, and even Tallinn in Estonia. So you started in Oslo. Was it just you, or did you have a team from the beginning? Paint a picture for me of that, the early days at Nordic Jobs Worldwide.
Yes. So me and my partner at that time, Bjorn, we also had a temp staff company together with some other people, but we sold our chairs and went separate ways with them. So we started a business in 17, but me and Björn was not, I would say, employed at that time. We did it as extra work on the side from our other job, but we started to hire people. So we had a guy from England that started with sales. We had a Norwegian recruiter that is still with us today, Henriette, and she is also a partner today. So they kind of started, and then we hired two more people. So it was a team of four in 17, and it was more to bring in business. So me and Björn, we are salespeople, we're bringing in business, and the others was like recruiting and starting to develop. But we had three clear kind of goals when we started the business. So one was to build the company organically, like old school business, like stone by stone. It's the same if you would start an old car reparation company in the past, or say selling cars, selling one car, buy two, sell two, buy three, and then you scale your business. It's similar here. Like the more we recruited, the more when we reach budget up month after month, and we were hiring one more and one more and one more. And then in 18, me and Björn started fully in the company as employees. And in that year, I think we went from six colleagues, with me and Björn included, up to 20. So we scaled really hard.
Wow.
So 18, 19 was scaling years. And then it was a bit hit, of course, of the pandemic because the borders were closed. So we need to put people on redundant. But we had a small team working close together still in that period. And when the borders open again, then we started to find solutions of how to boost the business. And back to the three key points. So one was organic growth, but the second was also to put in processes and routine from day one, because I have been a country manager as well in a recruitment firm. So I understood also the systems of how you work with everything, like from templates, reporting, all kind of system work. So that was an important thing, to have processes and routine so we could scale up. The third thing was also that we wanted to be best in what we do. We are sports people, so that sports mentality of always being best. And for me, best is not always 100%, but say that you're in competition with someone else and you deliver 51%, then you can say that you are the best. Or you maybe don't deliver the most, but you deliver the best on quality. So you have the most placements, even if you don't send the most candidates. Like, so always finding the trigger to be best. And those three key points was the growth strategy.
Did I get this right? You, in the first year, you scaled to 20 people?
The second year, I could
second
say.
Year. So first year was six people, and then second year was up to 20?
Yeah. And then at the most, we scale up to 87.
Whoa. Okay.
In 2023. But after, like, I would say from the second part of 23 until today, it have been a bit tricky. So we needed to take some strategic decisions internally and downsize the organization a bit. So today we are 65.
Okay. 65 people. Okay. Awesome. But even just getting to 20 in 2 years is very rapid, especially because it was all organic. You didn't have investors, right?
No.
So that's what was driving that aggressive growth? Because that's way faster than most recruitment agencies would grow.
No, but also, like, for example, from day one, when we started the business, we also put up six values and they are still active in the company. We also have three like keywords, like courage, trust, and result. So it's like having courage to climb Mount Everest and call it taking strategic risks, put the trust in the people we are hiring, and from that getting the results. And also if we have results that we are doing a profit, then we can invest that to hire new people. So we have not been in the business to earn money for ourselves. It have been to scale the business, to see how far we can take it.
Right. Okay. That is a key point, because what all the entrepreneurs who have really scaled have told me, a variation of what you just said, which is that if you want to scale, you can't draw down all the profits and put them in your pocket. You have to be more modest with your lifestyle and reinvest in growth. And it means short-term sacrifice for longer-term, a much bigger potential reward. But why was it important to you that you wanted to see how far you could take this, as you put it? Like, why did you want to scale something and build something bigger?
No, but now we are back a bit to the sports thing again. So, for example, when I have been coaching in sports also for 10 years, and now with the national team in Norway for 4 seasons, and it's to put up a goal, right? So I had an ambition. Okay, revenue target, 1 million, then 2 million, then 5 million. Okay, numbers of employment, 10, 20, 50. Amount of clients, 10, 20, 50, 100. Amount of countries we recruit for, 5, 10, 15. So it have always been to chase the next goal and also get the employees into that strategy. So when I put up a goal, I also need to live up to what I say. I cannot just say, oh, we should have clients in 15 countries and then we have 3. It doesn't make like, so I need to prove my strategy or my goal.
I get it. So the mindset is, like in sport, it's you're always trying to improve on your past performance, right? You're always trying to be better and achieve better results and, you know, a new record, a new personal best. And then once you achieve that, you can't rest there. You have to then stretch to the next goal. So what's cool about that, Rickard, is it becomes quite, it's an exciting environment to work in, right? And people who are part of it, they can see the growth, and then also they can see a long-term potential for themselves, and they can see a career path, and they can see, if I work hard and I get results for the business and I live the values that, you know, we've agreed on, then I could, you know, there's no limit to what I could achieve with this business. Whereas I'm not saying that's the only style of business, because if you have a more of a smaller boutique, there's other pros and any business model, there's pros and cons, right? And I'm sure we're going to get into some of the downsides in a second. But in a smaller firm, if you want to retain people, where do they go? What's the progression? That's the trade-off, right? Whereas in a company, in a fast-growing company like yours, there's a career path, there's a pathway for people to progress within your business. So, but explain to me, do you have, because I get asked this all the time and I still am searching for a good answer. So maybe you can give me the answer. How do you know when to make the next hire? What's the trigger? Is it, you know, and I've heard different formulas, but not one that I am satisfied with. So for you guys, how did you decide, okay, it's time to hire someone?
No, but it's actually, for us, it's pretty easy. It's like we have in individual budgets, of course, for each colleague. And if we see that one, call it Danish recruiter, reach their budget, for example, over a 2-month period, and we see that they should work with 5 different clients at the same time, and we have 10. Then we see that, okay, now we need a second one. So, for example, budget reach over 2 months and double amount of jobs means double amount of people internally. And when the second recruiter reached their budget and we have 15 Danish jobs, then we hire the third one. So it's always a strategy behind getting the next
one. So it's based on client on demand, right?
Yes,
so
open jobs.
Open jobs. Okay, so as a business, if we have more open jobs than we can have the capacity to deliver, then that forces us to grow. Because we want to meet the client's needs. And in order to do that, we need more team members. Is that the idea?
Correct.
Okay, fantastic. But what that suggests then is that you have strong demand generation. Whose job is it to win the client accounts and bring in the business? Because it seems like without that, the growth will stall. So was it a model where each person did their own business development, or did you have a separate sales team and then others were focused on candidates?
Yeah, so this is the scary and the beauty part of our organization. No, but we have had a few colleagues in the past that have worked with sales, and they are not with us anymore, but they, like, the first one that started in the company, he actually brought in some business from the beginning. So he did a good job together with me and Björn. We also had another lady that worked with us, built up her own kind of portfolio with business. So that have been helping. But today we have around 400 signed clients globally. And I think me and Björn have signed 300 of them.
Wow. Okay.
So we are still in the business.
Got it. So you and Björn, the founders, are also the primary business developers.
Exactly. And then we have today four, you can call it account executives / key account managers that take care of the language business. And when it comes to the IT part, we have two client managers, or the brand manager and the client manager, that take care of the clients. But then the recruiters are in charge of their own roles that they work with, their own jobs. And then the same in the search brand, that we also have a couple of colleagues that take care of the clients. And then we have a team that recruits for them.
Okay. So you use the term, you have over 400 signed clients. Does that imply the strategy is you're going after companies where there is repeat business potential, right? And that's part of the, you know, because if you just 400 clients, if you only make one placement with each one, right, is still not enough to support that size of a company. So what's the type of accounts that you're going after?
No, but so it have been a mix, and you can also look with different size clients, right? So we have what we call key clients, and they are on a big level, ongoing hiring, can be 10 different languages, and then the headcount can be 5 per language. It means that they have 50 open headcounts, right, to fill, and that can be maybe ongoing month by month. So that could be a contact center. And that is a big one that those four people I mentioned is handling, the big BPOs, the big contact centers of clients. Then we also have what we call maintenance clients, like the ones that are recruiting maybe 2 or 3 headcounts per quarter, but they know they can go to us because we can find Finnish or Norwegian or German or Dutch candidates. So they are coming back and they give us, say, 10 roles per year. And then we have, of course, the smaller one. There is maybe like 1 or 2 single assignments in a year that we fill. And then, of course, we bring in new clients, and they are either then a development client that we call it, that we can grow up to be a key client, or it stays as a maintenance client after some time.
That makes sense. I like the way that you've structured that. You've got the different tiers. Okay, awesome. So grew to 20 people by year 2. And then how did things progress from there? Because going all the way up to 90 people at the peak, or 87 or whatever it was, it just must have been a crazy ride, like, to grow that fast in 5 years or so. What were some of the high, like, I will talk about the challenges later, but what were some of the high points, and what do you attribute that success to?
No, but I think, again, like, with so many people, the courage, trust, result part. And also, like, for example, if we said that, okay, we will open an office in Barcelona, we open an office in Barcelona. If we said that we open an office in Lisbon, we open an office in Lisbon. And like those kind of things made it like exciting, like you said. So I think that people like the journey. We also had a very clear career path internally. We still have. And I think that also colleagues could see a fast growth within the business. And those things together with also then, of course, massive needs after 2022. I think it was a big scale-up year in general for business. So we took the chance to scale with the need that was out there, and we worked hard to stay on top, being the best in the world in what we do mentality. And then actually in February 2023, we went on a kickoff in Lisbon all together, all colleagues traveling in all over the world. We have some people worked remote as well in Europe. And when we had kind of the awards ceremony and the dinner and the party, it kind of felt like, okay, this was almost like a, call it like mission completed from the strategy and the goal we put up, and everyone could feel it with the excitement and the happiness that everyone showed that weekend.
So this was definitely a peak moment, right? Like, you feel like everything that you imagined when you started the business is like a reality. You're looking around at your team, you're celebrating the success together in Lisbon, you're doing the awards, you're doing the dinner and the party and everything. What was that feeling like?
Yeah, it was unreal. And especially like the first night on the Wednesday, we had like booked a bar only for us, and it was like free drinks and stuff. And people were coming in at different times because everyone was like landing that night with their flights from different locations. So every time like a new colleague or a new team arrived to the pub, then everyone else was applauding and we're like seeing, whoa, Tallinn, way, like, and then way, Stockholm, or way, Oslo. And like, it was so nice to see everyone gather that have just met online. How that created this worldwide energy. And then the day after, when we had everyone in an auditorium and I spoke from the stage and I could see almost 90 people sitting in front of me. And like, that was really, special moments, I must say.
Absolutely. I can only imagine that would be very special. But then, and so look, we'll talk about what happened afterwards and some of the corrections you've made, adjusting to the dynamics in the marketplace, which have definitely shifted in the last, 18 months. But let's first of all speak about some of the success factors. So you've got your core values, which I understand are courage, trust, results. Is that were the three keys? So how do you live those values internally? How does that translate into the kind of the way that you operate, the way you make decisions, and then the behaviors of the individuals in the company?
Yeah. So we also, like, on top of those six, we have those six, on top of those three, we have six other kind of values we live after. So like, one is top class performer. We want to have that sports mentality of being best in what we do, maybe like building a elite sports team in a way. And we also know that we are a talent factory. We are like Ajax Amsterdam in football, that we want to play Champions League final, but we also have the risk of losing talents to the bigger clubs in Europe.
Ah, right. Good point.
Yeah, and that is one part. The second value is always adapting, because like, when you're scaling so fast, there's things changing all the time and the world is changing as well. And the third thing is, of course, common success. Create a win-win-win solution where colleagues, candidates, clients, and the company all win in the work we are putting in. Also putting in a client partnership. We don't want to be seen as a supplier. We want to be seen as a partner. Those things, and like celebrate success and stuff, have been like a really important thing for us with the common success thing. So those things have built the company with the core values, and is something that is still with the company. That is kind of the culture we breathe. We put it on the walls, like we want to tell who we are. And maybe I lost the question a bit.
So
now,
the question, you've partly answered it, Ricard. But apart from putting it on the walls, how do you reinforce those values in the culture so that it's not just words on a wall, but it actually is real. It's really part of how you operate, how you behave, how people think.
Yeah. No, but I think it's also about repeating. And I think that is something we have been good at. We are repeating like what we are and how we are doing it and what we want to achieve. And also with the structure that we have put in place, like I said, it's a very like clear way of working and how you, like, for example, okay, when do you have a performance meeting? What does it mean? When do you have a development meeting? Okay, when are you sending a weekly report? What should be included? How do you do a budget breakdown? Okay, so all kind of structure and processes are there, And then the way we work, communicate, help each other, what kind of professionalism we are putting in, what goals we are setting, they are all there as well. So this kind of combination of the structure and the way we are maybe coaching, supporting, and repeating again, like it's the same, I think, in a football team as well. Even if you're in soccer school or if you are in Manchester City, you practice the same thing when you warm up. And I think that is like we have repeated our basics.
Brilliant.
And kept the foundation and the values.
Brilliant. Good answer. So you've touched on this a couple of times, is having the systems and processes in place to give you the foundation that you can scale. So I'd love to learn more about that. And you gave a little hint there, but what is the difference? What's a performance meeting and what's a development meeting, for example?
So a performance meeting should be more like to look into like how was the last month's kind of maybe budgets, maybe ups and cons, the delivery plan, where did you send candidates, what sources did you use to send those candidates? And based on the answers, then maybe either encourage to do more of something or maybe change something or give feedback on a new strategy for next month. And then also letting the colleague come up with their plan and their feelings of where they want to focus, how they're going to do it, what they feel is exciting, what is maybe challenging, and then, you know, setting up a new goal for the next 2 months of what we are planning to achieve and how to achieve it. So that is like a performance meeting. We also have something called belt system where you can tick off boxes of achievements in your recruitment career so you can get to the next level of recruitment. Like, oh, now I have a green belt. I have recruited 5 different language speakers.
Oh, brilliant. I like that.
Yeah.
So wait a second. Okay. So the performance meeting, how often do these happen?
Once per month.
Okay. So in some firms, I've heard that called an MBR, monthly business review.
Yeah.
It sounds similar. You're evaluating what happened in the last month. Where did you perform well? What are the areas for improvement? Get them ideally leading most of that and self-coaching, but then with your guidance and obviously your perspective, and then planning for the next month. Yeah. How does the belt system, so belts is in like martial arts belts, right?
Yes, karate.
Okay. And so I'll come back to the belts. You mentioned a development meeting. What's that?
It's more about the career progression. Like for example, after 6 to 12 months, I would say that many colleagues working with entry-level recruitment maybe get a bit impatient, like what is the next step? And then it could be different things. Can be sales, can be client management, can be team lead on delivery, and maybe supporting on what we have built like power teams. Like if someone likes marketing, maybe they can help out with marketing content. If they are strong with systems, they can help out with business analyst projects. So you can either be pushed in a direction where it's really like in the operations with the business, or it can be to support the business support team with tasks.
Okay, this is cool, Rickard. I've not come across this before. So tell me about these support projects, like whether it's a business analyst, can't even get my words out, business analyst sort of project or a marketing content effort. Is that sort of a side thing in addition to their main responsibilities as a recruiter?
Exactly.
And I mean, I think I can guess, but what is the reward for doing that? You know, is it simply the opportunity to have more variety in my tasks or to develop new skills? Like what's the payoff for getting involved in those types of projects?
Yeah, I would say that is the main thing. Imagine, for example, like one of our IT recruiters now. She is doing all the content for the IT brand that is published on LinkedIn, for example. And that is maybe, say, I don't know the amount, to be honest, but say that it's 2 hours per week. Then she actually have 2 hours per week where she can learn new things. For example, it can be a tool to create the content. It can also be to investigate what kind of content that sell or that's interesting to read. And also like how to work with pictures and what kind of visualized So that those 2 hours is, like you said, something else, and where you can either learn, but also maybe work on something that you think is fun, and also to get a bit distance from recruitment, to be honest.
Yeah. This is a brilliant idea, Rickard, and I'll tell you why. Because recruiting is, as we, everyone listening knows, is not easy, right? It's tough, and it can people can burn out, right? And
yeah,
I think the solution to avoiding the monotony setting in, and which also leads to burnout, is not to work less, but it's to have something fresh about the role that can just make it a little bit interesting again, so that it gives you that variety. I think that helps to keep things fresh so that you don't burn out and you still enjoy coming into the office every day. So that's super cool. Then, okay, you start telling me about the belt system. Is that official, or is that just a fun informal thing? Like, do you have how does it work?
Actual belts, physical belts.
So you order from the martial arts e-commerce store the different color belts.
Yep.
And then how do I earn my? How do you grade? How do I get promoted?
So, for example, to white belt, lowest on the list, is like to hit your KPIs 2 weeks. For example, have your first placement, like those kind of things. So I think it's 5 boxes to tick off, and then you get the white belt. And then there is, of course, 6 stages, 6 colors. And we have 3 different physical belts that we give out, the 2nd, 4th, and 6th belt. And the last one is, of course, black. And black is that you have reached a yearly budget, that you have maybe recruited for 5 different countries, that you have placed 5 different languages, that you are point of contact for 5 clients. So you have some last boxes to tick off, and it shouldn't be too easy to reach it, but it could not take too long either. So maybe up to 2 years, maybe.
This is really, I love this idea because it makes it fun, right? And it is a way of gamifying this learning and this development process where you're equating actual results, to use one of your keywords, that someone can achieve within their job, but that, you know, rather than just salary and commission, those are obviously levers or promotion that you have available to reward people, but those are long-term big things, right? And you can't just increase someone's money every time they do something good for themselves or for the business. But this is a way of showing that they're making progress in ways that can be a little bit intangible, right? Yeah. So like responsible for 5 clients or making placements in 5 countries, it's measurable, but it doesn't directly increase my commission, but it is valuable, so we want to reward it. So having the belt shows progress and attaches meaning to it. I think that's really clever. Are there any belts after black, like first Dan, second Dan?
No, but we have actually started to discuss it now, because, like, of course, people that are senior that have worked here for many years, they are past the black belt, and maybe we need to put up either like that you can win it twice, or that you can maybe put up any new color or ambition. But maybe at least put in new boxes. So for example, when we have either a performance or a development meeting, for example, say that someone has worked there for 4 years, and say that you are office manager in Malaga, you have 15 people, maybe one box then should be to grow up to 20 people. So that is one box. And then we can discuss how to get there and maybe put up a goal. And then maybe if we are 20 in 6 months from now, then he can tick off his box. So we need to find new ways to motivate the ones that have already reached it as well. But we are not that good at that yet.
Well, it's a cool idea. I like that a lot, because a lot people think that black belt is like the top, right? That you're an expert, but really it just means that you're not a beginner anymore, that you know some stuff and you're now entering a new phase of learning where you really are focused more on, you know, all of the basic techniques, right? You can demonstrate, you can do them like on cue, but this is a game of mastery, right? And you never get to mastery, but it's the refinement after that. So it's cool.
And you put it in your signature as well on the email. So you put in what belt color you have. I have black belt in World Widers Recruitment, for example.
Oh, that's cool. Excellent. That must start a lot of conversations with candidates and clients. Like, what is this? It says you're a black belt in recruitment. That's hilarious. Okay. So you're standing on the stage, you're looking at 90 people who have all flown in from different offices around Europe, and you're on a real high. What happened like over the last couple of years and that have forced you to restructure things? And could you walk me through that process? Because I think you're, and by the way, I appreciate your courage and being willing to share this, because this is, people love talking about their successes, but I've found not many people have the courage to talk about the things that have not gone to plan, Rickard. So,
yeah. No, but I can be pretty honest about this, because it's not something I'm like ashamed of, but of course, maybe I was a bit naive at some point, and this is something, you know, we can learn from now for the future. But like when we had the peak, it's like also how fast should you grow and to what limit? And also, like, if you see, for example, that we were losing a lot of business. So take an example. We have a client that requests 10 Swedes per month, and we recruit 5. The client recruits 2, and a competitor recruits 2 or 3. So that is 10. And then a year after, the same month, the need is 5. But the client do 3 themselves, and we maybe do 1, and a competitor do 1. It means that we only recruited 1 instead of 5 on the same client 1 year later. So a lot of business was downsized, and especially on the volumes we recruited. So we couldn't get the same results from the same work we were putting in. We could maybe put in 100% and get 100% budget the year before. Now you put in 200% work and you get 50% budget. And that is tough for colleagues, like you say, about burning out, but also not getting success to what you're used to. So that have been one thing, to be honest. The second thing is also that I mentioned this to you, where you could be included in power teams and invest, for example, 2-3 hours per week to do something else to, you know, boost your motivation. At some point, those power teams started to be too many hybrid roles. So colleagues applied to be hybrids. Oh, I want to work 50% with marketing and 50% with recruitment. And we thought that this was a good idea. But at some point, if, for example, recruitment was not going well, the excuse was always that marketing took too much time. Or if you had to put in too much on recruitment, then you were a bit unhappy because you couldn't invest too many hours in marketing. So that also created a conflict of interest internally between your two jobs. Should I do marketing or recruitment? And also the third thing was that building so many teams, we also let go. And we still have to let go of the control. But it was a lot of managers at the same time that was hired or not hired, but actually promoted. And it's not easy to be the middleman either when business are going tough, to like you get one message from, call it top management, and then you have your own values, and then you have your colleagues, and like, okay, should I take the company side or should I take my colleague side? And if you're in the operations of the business, I think it's easier to take your colleague sides.
Sure.
And it's maybe if you see that you put in those 200% and only get 50% results, maybe you stop follow some of the values or the core basics that we have. So we lost a small part of our identity that was built up, and also that we were spread out everywhere. Like now we had 7 offices. We even have an office in Suriname, in Latin America. And we also had people working hybrid from Finland and France and Sweden. And I think this all happened kind of at the same time. When we had our peak, this happened. And we, with our result and growth 5 years in a row, we were thinking that, oh, but this is temporary. We can fix this next month, just a new performance meeting, and this will be fixed in June. And then nothing happened in June. Okay, it can be fixed in July. And this was going on for too long, I would say. And then at some point, we could say like, okay, now this is a trend. This is not working. Let's change back. And changing back from 87 takes a long time. So also like scaling, for example, can go fast. But downsizing can also be slow in a way because you're also in the operations working every day, right? So this year have been a lot of like getting back to our identity, changing a bit of the organization to, I would say, release the pressure for managers, not having so many managers. Let people lead instead, lead by actions, lead by responsibilities, but not need to be each other's managers that, oh, I'm the manager of Mark. No, I can be a client leader and I lead on the delivery on the client, but I don't need to talk with you about working hours, performance, blah, blah, blah. Like we removed that part more and went back to the basics and also could see, okay, we had 500 open jobs at the most. Now we have 330. It means that we have lost, say, 30% of the job openings. Yeah, but maybe we need to reduce 30% of the workforce internally as well. And back to the strategy, like I said, when we have 5 jobs, we have 1 recruiter. When we have 10 jobs, we have 2 recruiters, and balance it better and don't push it too far and too fast. And also, instead of having 50-50 hybrids, going back to let more people do a few hours here and there with the power teams and not being tempted to change that into a hybrid role just because the colleague is so committed or engaged to marketing. Okay, yes, let's do 50%. And then it turned up to be a mix of results. So like, no, but okay, we're a recruitment company. Let's focus on that. We are not building a marketing agency. We are not building a HR agency. We are not building a system and admin agency. We need those functions. We have them, but we don't need to have 3-4 hybrids in each team.
That all makes total sense. And I'm sure many entrepreneurs listening will be able to relate to what you shared to their own experience, Rickard. How do you navigate that as a leader? Because it's tough. Making difficult decisions, downsizing, these are not fun activities. And how do you navigate through that and keep the loyalty and the inspiration of the rest of the team? Because if the company's downsizing, that can be the morale and the esprit de corps takes a hit, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you bring people together and come out of this in a positive place?
Yeah, so one good thing is that I think we were pretty honest about this in like Q2, beginning of Q2. We were honest about the situation and also about the things I mentioned for you, about management, about hybrid roles, about less jobs. And actually with the downsizing part, it have been more people actually kind of leaving on their own, if we call it like that, instead of us going into conflicts and fights. Like we have been honest and then, okay, some colleagues have decided to move on themselves. So we have avoid conflicts, I would say. Of course, some tough talks have been made and some people have been, call it, requested to leave, but some have also left by themselves. So that have been one part, that it have not been so many conflicts. But of course, if one strong personality leaves in one team, it can have an impact and then two other follows. We also have another issue, I would call it, challenge, is that all our colleagues are also expats. We recruit for jobs abroad and our colleagues works abroad. So at some point, if you're Finnish and live in Malaga, maybe you want to go back to Finland.
Ah, right.
So we also have that challenge of losing people moving back to their home countries and taking on new jobs. Because like IX Amsterdam also, we develop talent and they move on. So, but that part, but I think it was to gather around 15 people that have been the seniors and also that are in important roles and just play with open books. And as a team, put up goals together, let them be a part of the goal setting, how we should handle this, trying to be transparent with info. And now when we kind of have turned it around, let them be a part of the journey of how we should scale again, but with a different way of working, smartness.
Awesome. That's brilliant. I love that. And of course, one of your core values is always adapting, right? So
yeah.
If you hired people who are in line with that value, then they hopefully they're less resistant to change and adapting because you had no choice. You have to adapt. And all businesses have had to adapt. There's so much happening in the world now with, you know, it's a very dynamic situation. So adapt. So how will you scale again and what will you do differently to the next time around?
No, but first of all, now we have a cost control document on a different level. So we each actually look on a daily basis what the monthly cost is. And then look at the budget and see how much we have in the forecast and then budget. So we make more decisions based on cost versus income, if you call it like that.
So the financial controls are much more robust and yeah, that's wise, absolutely.
That is one thing. And the second thing is also now back to the basics, like, okay, 5 open jobs, for example, 1 recruiter. If they reach their budget over 2 months, let's get the next in. If we don't get the recruiter up, we need to figure out, is this person going to make it happen in the future? Is there some training help support we can put in? Or like, is there something wrong? Do we don't have enough needs in this market? Like, what is the situation? But when we see that something good is going on and we see that this is, how do you say, we have a strong pipeline, we have a foundation for this market, then we will hire the next one. And of course, if we win new big projects, then also that can help with the scaling to bring in more people because there is a need for it, but not just for fun to be 100.
Absolutely. So you're, what I love, you haven't lost that mindset of we want to continue setting new goals, hitting new records, and let's see how far we can take this. You're just learning from challenges, adapting and improving. For example, we need better financial controls. We need to go back to basics. And then let's grow again. That's I love that mindset, Ricard. And I guess it brings us back to the sport mindset because, you know, if you are a team and you lose a game or you have a bad season, let's say, then we need to regroup, but we're not going to give up, right? We still want to win. We still want to get back to, so how, maybe you can tie it up with, as an athlete, as a coach, and as an entrepreneur, what's the message that you would say to your internal team, as well as to our audience about being able to come back from a setback and start winning again?
No, but I think you touched on it and the word I mentioned, like back to the basics and to regroup, like go back to setting up a goal, but break it down into sub goals. And then, for example, say that you're playing a season, you're doing bad in hockey, for example, NHL or football, Premier League. Okay, but next year, let's set up a sub goal. Instead of looking on the full season, look at the 5 first games. Like what can we do to, instead of getting 3 points out of those 5, at least get 6 or 9, for example. okay, we lost 9 out of 10 away games last year. We need to improve that. So how can we only lose 5 out of 10 and start to measure it and see the progression of us actually not losing that many away games, actually bringing in more points, and then maybe break it down to the game. Okay, too many goals against the first 15 minutes. Okay, then we need to focus extra the first 15 minutes to play safe, not go on counterattacks, lose the ball and get it back. Like to find things that you can develop and that you can work on as a sub goal. And when you have reached that sub goal, okay, next part, look into the half season. What happens before Christmas, after Christmas, and then what happens in March? And if we are still top three and it's 3 games left, then we can maybe put up a goal of winning the league and, you know, working step by step.
I love it. That's a great mindset to bring. And it's very practical. It's not just a pep talk, right? It's very practical steps, what we can do to improve and give ourselves the best chance of winning. So that's brilliant, Ricard. So look, thank you for being on the show. This was a lot of fun. Let's do it again and tell me the next milestone that you guys achieve. How does that sound?
Yeah, perfect. Let's do that in a year from now.
All right, Ricard. Sounds good. Thank you so much. That was fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes. You'll see one or two suggested episodes on the screen now.